following presentation, Security Debt and the Rule of 72, was given by Martin McKay of Akamai at Network Shop 42 in April 2014.
So before I really start my talk, I want to reinforce some of the points Bernadette made. I started blogging about 10 or 11 years ago because I had ideas. I wanted to see how they would resonate with other security professionals. Got a lot of feedback. I started a podcast about 8 years ago. I'm on Twitter. I've lost a job because I said the wrong thing to the wrong person on Twitter. But I also owe my current job because of my blogging, my podcasting, and Twitter, because I interviewed my CSO, who then later, a couple of years later, asked me to come in and work for the company. So yeah, there's a lot to be said for the being conscious of what your social media presence brings, and I've seen both sides of it. So as was mentioned, I just recently, about 7 months ago, moved from California to the UK, and the response that I keep getting is, "Dear Lord, why?" It's not because I love the weather, as was insinuated. It was actually because I wanted to give my kids an idea of what a different lifestyle was than the California lifestyle. I wanted my family to have more access to the world in general. And so far, it's been worth every minute of it. I've really enjoyed living in London and being able to travel around and see a lot of people. So I have a confession to make. Years ago, I used to be a life insurance agent. I spent about 6 months selling life insurance and mutual funds and other things. Not exactly the best career choice. I'm much happier as a security professional, but it was something worth doing. One of the things that I learned there is the rule of 72. So what I'm going to be talking about today is security debt, the idea that we owe, every time we can't do something, we owe a debt to that. That's going to cost more and more to repay. I'm going to talk about the security poverty line. This is the idea that there is a certain level where the debt you owe actually outweighs how much work you can put into it. I'm going to talk about H.D. Moore's law, and then I'm going to talk a little bit about how these all fit together. The rule of 72 is actually fairly simple. So you take the interest rate you're getting, you divide 72 by that interest rate, and that's how long it takes your money to double. So let's say you have a non-existent account that actually gives you 3% interest on your savings. 72 divided by 3 is 24. Every 24 years, that money will double. This becomes really important when you're talking about mutual funds, when you're talking about life savings, when you're talking about how am I going to be able to retire because I can't be certain that the government's going to actually be able to pay for all of this. You look at that. If you remember as a kid, you're asked, which would you rather have, $5 a day allowance or one penny that doubles every other day? You guys, do any of you remember having that intellectual exercise with your parents? When you look at a 31-day month, if you double it every day for that month, on that 31st day, it will be $21.5 million or thereabouts that you're supposed to be getting a day. It really does work that well, that easily, compound interest. It's a great thing. But it doesn't just apply to finances. It applies to a lot of things in our lives. The security poverty line was an idea that was came up with by a lady named Wendy Nather. Now, at the time, Wendy was working for the Department of Education in Texas. She had basically was trying to do the same job many of you are trying to do with little or no money, with no ability to have new people or additional people, with very little funding for being able to buy any new technologies to take advantage of this. She was having issues where she was actually just trying to figure out how to keep things running without making changes to the environment, without having advantages of technologies that would give those people the ability to work harder, work faster, get more done. And she talks a lot about how you have to come up with workarounds. You have to use open source, but that comes with its own cost of the fact that when you're using open source, a lot of times the amount of manpower it requires to make things work is higher than it would be if you were using a enterprise tool. How there are just some things that you will never be able to get done, and you have to give up and do what you can. This also it kind of goes back to that idea of finances, where there is a real life poverty line where you have to look at what is my life costing me, what can I just know that I can never do. You think of the parallels there between what we're doing in security and what people who are living at this poverty line have to make decisions. And sometimes, being human beings, we make the wrong decisions. We choose technologies that we can't necessarily support within our organization. We choose to buy an Xbox when the money should be going to paying for groceries for the month. There is a real parallel between the two sorts of concepts. So this resonated a lot with me. I like giving credit where credit's due, but this idea that is, quite frankly, not just something that education's dealing with. It's most corporations are dealing with at one level or another. We're not looking at something where people have all the resources they need to get security done. They're having to make do and do the best they can with minimal resources. So a second idea that I've encountered was by my friend and former coworker Josh Corman. You may have heard of Josh. He did a lot of work on the sociology of Anonymous. He's written about them a lot. He's a very unreasonable man, meaning that he's not ever willing to accept the status quo. He's not ever willing to accept that good enough is good enough. But he came up with what he called H.G. Moore's Law. How many of you know what Metasploit is? Rapid7. Metasploit is a framework, a set of tools, where you can go and run the latest vulnerabilities against your network. This will go out, look at your network for you, and report back what are all these vulnerabilities, what are the exploits, and actually help you run the exploits against your network. So the idea of H.D. Moore's Law is that Metasploit becomes the default line for what you have to do to be secure. We look at the lines of what you have to do to be secure, and quite frankly, looking at something like PCI, looking at ISO, looking at any of the sorts of frameworks, that's the lowest line. That doesn't make you secure. A little bit above that is the script kiddies, the guys who know how to run one or two tools, know one or two vulnerabilities, know a little bit about making a tool run, and they can still own your network in a lot of cases. The next step up is H.D. Moore's Law, the H.D. Moore's Law, the line where Metasploit, where I can download a tool today, and in 15, 20 minutes, maybe an hour, have a VM set up so that I can be running this against your network from inside your network as one of your employees, and be owning your network. I can be coming from the outside world doing this. There's enough vulnerabilities that are in the HD, Metasploit, that really anybody can download very quickly, very easily. So this becomes the bottom line of what you have to be able to do to secure your network. So if you look at that, and you look at what your networks are capable of defending you against, it gets kind of scary. Can you run a Metasploit attack, a Metasploit engine against your own networks and come up with being able to secure it against that? If you can't, then you're not secure. And then we have that whole line of, hey, there's the nation state or I hate the term, APT, or if you're in government, we can use cyber, but please don't, ever. These are the people who actually are going to look at your network and try not just take targets of opportunity, but actually try and understand your network to figure out how to get in. We look at something like target. You're all familiar. Target's lost something around, numbers have varied. It was 40 million, then it was 70 million. I've heard 110 million. Credit card records. Not because Target was all that insecure, but because the people that had their that ran their HVAC were insecure. Their network got compromised. That was a jumping off point to the Target network. Now the bad guys are in Target's network, owning the systems, and using that as a way to get back to getting the credit card information back to them. So that's H.G. Moore's law. So what is security debt? We know what technical debt is. Security debt is that is technical debt specific to security. It's the difference between what can we do and what do we need to do. Quite frankly, in many organizations, that's a huge delta. There is patching, which we need to do on an almost daily basis. But I've run into organizations where they say, well, yes, our routers are 3 years out of date in their iOS upgrades because we can't get downtime to patch them. This was an organization that literally it was more important to their management to have 24/7 uptime at every day for 3 years than it was to go and patch. It's the technologies. We see a lot of new technologies coming out, all of them promising that they will enable us to secure our networks. They're all point solutions. Every last one of them is a point solution. They're not going to necessarily do exactly what they say. They're not going to cover everything. We know there is no silver bullet for security. There is nothing that is going to make it so that we can just secure our network. We have to have different technologies. We have to have a way of making it so that our network is uniquely protected by the technologies we have available to it to us. There's the debt of knowledge of being able to keep up to date. It takes a lot of work for us to keep up to date with what are the latest attack vectors, what is the latest technologies. It takes passion. And that's number one, hard to find. There's a limited number of people who look at security and go home at the end of the day and go, yeah, I've worked on these systems for 8, 10, 12 hours, but I want to go and look up more and find out more and make myself better. And that really is where we're still at the point for knowledge. And even the people who are enthusiastic to that point have a hard time keeping that up, keeping that going year after year after year. That knowledge, every time there's something coming out, something changing that we don't have the time or the energy to find out about, is one more thing. Manpower. How many of you have ever worked in an environment where you have enough people to get everything done? There's always more. And willpower. Back to the thought of knowledge, it's having the willpower, not just of us as the security professionals, but of our organizations. You could probably take most of the ills in security today and actually say that they are because our corporations, because our universities, because our governments lack the willpower to actually make our network secure. You could probably, every one of you could probably tell me a dozen things that you could do tomorrow to make your network more secure, to make it so that they could do what they need to do still, but do it in a more secure manner. But because that would take money, manpower, knowledge, the organization isn't willing to put in that willpower to make it happen. It's more important to have research flowing. It's more important to have the new technologies. It's more important to have social media than it is to actually have things secure. We may be seeing that change with the NSA, GCHQ, all of the things that are happening with spying. We're probably going to see some of that change because the populace isn't as willing to accept that anymore. So how does this all come together? really, every time that you fail to be able to do something, that you can't do it because you don't know you should be able to do it, because you can't do it because there's not the time, there's not the manpower, there's not the knowledge, it adds a little bit of debt. And debt accrues in security just like it does in the real world. If you've got a credit card with that 12 or 15% debt interest rate, you're doing good. But most of us have or have had a credit card with that 20 or 25 or 30% interest rate. And we've seen how that creates additional debt all on its own. Information security is much the same. We're not at a 10 or 12% interest rate for the debt of information security. I didn't have time to include this in the slide, but what I figured is best case, we're at about a 15% interest rate for security debt. We're probably more closer to the 20% interest rate. But all of that is just like real debt, in that the more debt you have, the more it prevents you from doing real work, from doing the other things that you could do that would lighten the load, that would make it easier to secure the networks. It causes a lot of stress. I mean, this is another form of debt for us, is the amount of stress that we deal with on a daily basis. It only gets worse as we have that additional workload, as we have that additional things that we see we can't get done, the things that we know we need to have done but can't. As the slide says, all it takes is one little prick. It takes the wrong person in the wrong place at the wrong time to actually make it all fall apart. Again, Target is a great example. They had a good information security program, but because they were connected to somebody that didn't have a good information security program, because they were connected to somebody that was not necessarily up to their standards, they suddenly are looking at billions of dollars. I think somebody at lunch told me that this has had such a great impact on the credit card industry that many places are looking at not being able to produce enough credit cards to replace all of these. There's 110 million. That means that there's a lot of people who are going to have their credit cards compromised for years to come. If you actually look at what's happened to the credit card black market, it's kind of funny, because even before Target, the black market was devaluing credit cards quite considerably. Since then, they've gone through the floor. I think it was a Gartner or someone else came out with a paper last week saying that it's actually more profitable to have somebody's Twitter account and password than it is to have their credit card information. But this is an industry problem. I mean, this is where I think that this organization and these groups come in, is that, first of all, we're built on a very weak foundation. If you look at information security, we don't have really strong foundations. We look at, we're going to build a firewall, we're going to have a perimeter, we're going to secure that and we'll be secure. I talked to Marcus Rainham one time, and he said that one of the worst things that he had ever done was to create the firewall, because it created a network filter that never really secured anything. It just made people feel secure. We really need to go back to the basics. We need to be looking at what are we really doing? What are we really protecting? How are we protecting it? I think one of the things that we're not seeing enough people do is actually look at the data that they have on their networks. If you do nothing else, go back and see what information is flowing across your networks. There are too few network people that actually understand what is flowing across their networks, what is normal. Can you tell me, looking at your network, what is normal and abnormal flows? Can you actually look at that and tell me when something unusual is going on? When the NTP reflection attack started happening, were you able to see those ahead of time and go, wait, what's that? Or did you have to be told by other people that, hey, you might have some NTP reflectors on your systems? We've got poor business incentives. This takes place whether it's a university, a government, or a business. We really do not place security as something to sell. We place it as a cost center. We think of it as something that has to be done, not something that we want to do. we need to look at that and finding a better way of selling security into the business, of making it a real incentive to make it so that companies will do more of it. And quite frankly, even the best of the best get compromised. If you look at Lockheed Martin from a couple of years ago, if you look at RSA and some of the compromises they've had, we're talking about people who should know security better than any of us, and they still get compromised. So we need to be looking at how can our systems be compromised in a way that we can recover them, that we can still do business, that we're not going to lose the whole farm because we made one mistake. So what can we do? We can declare bankruptcy. I mean, that's what you can do in the real world. I've done it by looking at a company and going, they don't want to ever secure anything. So what do? I go find a company to work for that will secure it. We can't do that as an industry. We can't do that. Everybody can't do that. But there are some times where that declaring bankruptcy will be the right thing to do, where to say that this company just is never going to get it, never wants to get it. I have to leave. We can stay the course. We can keep on doing what we've been doing. Quite frankly, that's probably what's going to happen. We can just look at keeping and doing the same things, but re-examine the basics. Re-examine some of your basic assumptions about how you do security. Do you really understand your network? You know it doesn't look like the diagram you have, so why not? Figure out how it's different. Figure out how you can keep it up to date and how you can keep that knowledge. We have to make the most of what we have, obviously. Change the business equation. Start selling security within your corporation. Start within your university. Start making it so that people understand that this is not just a cost center, but it's actually something that other organizations are going to look at and use it as a sales point. We're becoming more security conscious on an almost daily basis. It's actually probably one of the best times security has ever had for making security a benefit to the whole organization. So try pushing that button a little bit more. Spend. You notice I say blinky lights here. RSA, great show, lots of fun. All the blinky lights in the world, and most of it will cover one small portion of your network, you can spend your way out of security debt. I mean, that's really how you get out of debt in the real world, is you spend your way out of it. You pay it off, but in security, it's not going to be as effective. We aren't going to get more secure by buying more lights, more devices, unless we can figure out how to make them all integrate into everything else we do and understand it better. But what I think we really need to do is we need to innovate. We need to understand the basics of security. We need to re-examine it, and we need to come up with a new paradigm for security. How can we reimagine the whole security process? The tools we've got aren't going to all do it. So how do we change the way we look at security? Can we get beyond the castle wall and moat concept that so many of us are still dealing with right now? Can we make that next step to something that really works? Can we start understanding more about how to secure our environments? And I don't think that there's a better place to start than universities. So, and here's where you can find me, folks. Any questions? Guess not.
I've got one, Martin. We've had a few security sessions over the past couple of days, and I think in one of the sessions, it was Sean Duffy from the University of Birmingham was speaking, and he was saying that one of the keys to taking security seriously is lift it up to information security and really raise it to the sort of top of the organization, mm-hmm. the responsibility. And I think that's what...
That's part of willpower, is to get the buy-in, and even going above that level, yeah. Of going to the CEO, going to the board, and making sure that they understand. I'm using business terms in universities, but going to the highest levels and making sure that not just the CTO or the CSO or the people whose direct responsibility is going to be security, but the people at the highest level are going to understand it as well.
This recording was brought to you by Janet Training as part of NetWorkshop Online. Further information is available on our website at www.ja.net/training.